Collective Minds Radio.
Stand on your square, we on the earth, we about to earn out. Tune in and turn it up to hear what we talking about, whether it's old or a new point. Call in with your viewpoint and add to our collective of colorful perspective. The brothers, word to the mothers of the queens and the kings. We gon' get into some things, dig deep and going deeper, waking up the sleeper. Who be been the keeper? Yeah, your boy done found a keeper. See, we talking.
It is what it is.
Peace, family. We back in the building. This is your brother, Brother Kev, a.k.a. Cosmic Kev.
And this is Rigel.
Hotel, assalamu alaikum, and Abari Gandhi. Yeah, that's right. That's right, you y'all. And this is Brother Montoy. Assalamu alaikum, family.
Yes, indeed. And we are Collective Minds Radio. We are back again for another exciting show, hopefully to share constructive dialogue with the family. This is Collective Minds, where we say we all ain't got to think alike, but we all have to think. So we thank everybody for joining us. We hope everybody week has, you know, went well, weekend been good. So we got a great show lined up, and before we do, like we always do here at Collective Minds, Queen Rigel and my brother Mufasa, how has y'all week been? They done opened everything up. I know y'all excited to hit the malls, hit them bars, hit the club. What has been going on? How y'all week been since they done opened everything back up?
Talk it to is me. What it is.
Well, for me personally.
I was joking, y'all.
Of course. But for me, I mean, I can't say that I'm very, very surprised Geminis have entered the scene, moving everything out the way, making everything open.
Oh,
but
Lord.
I still want to encourage everybody to practice safety and social distancing. I know the Geminis are on the scene, and we are a protector, you know, for those that don't know.
That's right.
The world is back open. Bam. So just continue to practice social distancing. And, you know, I don't know what to tell you guys after we leave and whoever else is entering in. I don't know what's going to happen after that. But, you know, right. So now things are open, but just be safe.
All right. All right. Brother Mufasa, how have you been since the opening? And do you got any announcements for the family?
Yeah, I've been doing all right, y'all. I'm a little disturbed. You know, I had to go to the grocery store this morning and take care of some rooms for my mother. And all these people who are going back to Ross, y'all going to make me just do a drive-by on y'all. Because it don't make no sense that Ross got people sitting outside their stores like it's a carnival. I'm talking about ain't no social distancing. They all was all on top of each other. And I thought it was just the Ross where I was at. But then I was looking back in some of my Facebook comments and shoot, I guess people across in other places was having the same issue with Ross opening back up, because I guess they've been closed during this whole COVID time. So now they're back open and people then lost their mind. All the Ross supporters are back out in full effect. So, hey, you Ross people going to have to get it together. Outside of it, everything is good, wonderful. And looking forward to another great beer with y'all.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And, yes, it should be a great build, family. This week on Collective Minds, we are discussing how do we address mental health or mental illness in our communities. And we do have, a mental health expert who is going to be joining us here in a second. But, again, this show was actually inspired because, you know, those who are alumni and listen to the show every week, you know that we had to take a break 2 weeks ago. We actually had to cancel a show, and that was due to a family member. One of our cousins had, you know, the official story is he committed suicide. And without going into too many details, we want to dedicate this show to him. You know, that's number one. You know, we want to dedicate the show to him. And we also want to talk about mental illness because, again, we feel like it may have been some things going on there and we may have just missed and wasn't able to address, you know, those issues in time, you know, before he, you know, before he took his life. So that is what has inspired this show. We want to say his name. We want to dedicate this show to Lil Cliff, is what we call him, Clifton Spencer. You know, that's our little cuz. He made the transition. So this show, again, about mental health was inspired by him, and we do want to, you know, dedicate this particular conversation, this build. We want to dedicate this to Lil Cliff, you know, so rest in power. To our little cuz. So we're going to have the, you know, the Collective Minds panel go in real quick, and we're going to bring in our healthcare professional. Do y'all want to bring her in now, or do y'all want to, you know, go ahead and, you know, give y'all a spiel on how you guys think we can address the issue?
I'm good.
That's
up to Mufasa.
Mufasa, you want to?
Yeah.
Go in.
Well, I make it plain because I want to add in that also that this is a good time for us to do this because this month, if people didn't know, is Mental Health Awareness Month.
That's
and,
right.
That's something that's been an observation in the United States since 1949. So, you know, this is another another reason why we wanted to do this show. And again, you know, rest in power to Lil Cliff. And, I'm ready to bring him in as well. I'm just bringing the experts.
Yes, indeed. Let's go ahead and bring in our mental health professional, Kalita Crisp. Are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. First of all, thank you for joining us. You know what I'm saying? Sharing some of your evening with us for this discussion. We definitely appreciate it. And just before we get started, I want to give you an opportunity to introduce yourself. And if there's anything that you think the family should know about who you are and what you do, can you just share that with us and give us a brief introduction?
Thank you. I just want to first thank Collective Minds for having me on to discuss this very important issue. I think that, as Mufasa was saying, this is Mental Health Awareness Month, and whatever we can do to just spotlight mental health and provide people with resources or just basic information about different mental health disorders and where they can go for resources or help if they're struggling with a mental health issue. I think that's very important. I just really thank you guys for having this show on. I too knew Lil Cliff. He was very important to me. I loved him. And so it's unfortunate that he succumbed to his illness. You know, he was sick, and the disease ended up taking over. But just doing this show in his honor is just making it so that he didn't die in vain, and maybe his death can help some other people heal. So just
that's
about
right.
Me, I have worked in mental health for about 15 years now. I am currently the executive director and co-founder of a nonprofit organization called Empower Me, and what we do is assist individuals who receive Social Security benefits, manage their benefits. We also help them to manage all of their assets, like if they have other type of entitlement programs that they're a part of, we try to assist them with keeping all of their resources and helping them to manage them. Like I said, I am a co-founder, so I have a partner, and he also has a mental health background. That's our career, that's our profession. And so we just use our experience and our skills and the anointing that God has given us to try to help people be whole, you know. So I guess we can get started if you guys want. We can get started if you guys want. So I just want to kind of talk about, I can also say about our business, Empower Me. 100% of our clients have probably 100% have a mental health diagnosis of some sort. And so a great deal of our clients also have a substance use disorder. So they have co-occurring disorders, which is very common with individuals with mental health disease. Oftentimes, the disease comes first, and particularly in the African-American community, because of stigma and misinformation and a lot of other things, we start to self-medicate with illicit substances or alcohol, which leads us down a road that makes it harder to recover. So quite a number of our clients, you just don't see co-occurring disorders in the African-American community. But, of course, like with any other disease, the effects of it in our community is just more detrimental. And so I just want to start by kind of like defining mental illness, because oftentimes when people think about mental illness and mental health, they automatically start thinking like crazy. And that is not so.
Right.
You know, a mental health is a mental illness. It's just that it's an illness that has come about because there's usually some type of disease that has happened in the brain, some type of hormonal imbalance that has caused things not to work ideally. And with mental illness, when you have something like that happening in your brain, it kind of affects your mind. So oftentimes people don't see the brain and the mind as separate because they work together, but they are separate. You know, the mind is more about your consciousness. And so, and
that's
how
right.
you perceive things and your perception, where your brain is what helps you to function in all your physicalities. And so when you have a disease of the brain, which is just an organ, then it impacts your mind, which then leads to behaviors that are maladapted in society. And people start then saying, oh, that person's crazy, when they're not crazy. They just have an illness that they're dealing with. And so I want to define mental illness as a health problem that significantly impacts how a person thinks, behaves, or interacts with others. So it's very basic. That's what it is. It's a health problem. It's a health condition that affects how a person thinks, behaves, and interacts with others. And so I want to kind of just my goal with this conversation tonight, it's just to kind of provide just basic information about the different disorders out there, because I know sometimes when people say someone may be mentally ill, our minds automatically go to schizophrenia or something like that. And there are so many more illnesses that constitute a mental illness that are sometimes not acknowledged, and those people suffer just as much. And so I'm going to give like 7 basic types of mental illness disorders, and then give some of the symptoms that are associated with those disorders. And so you have a mood disorder, which is like the depression, the bipolar. And some of the symptoms that you see with individuals with this disorder may be like trouble concentrating. They may have problems with memory or decision-making, fatigue, insomnia, restlessness, irritability. And sometimes people with mood disorders, especially clinically depressed folks who have gone long periods of time without any help, they'll begin to become hopeless. And they'll have worthlessness, and you'll hear them talk about just feeling empty. You know, they kind of lose interest in things that at one time was pleasurable to them. They may start having aches and pains that don't really have a injury associated with it. So they just don't know why they hurt. They just hurt. You know, they may start having digestive issues. You know, things like that that they can't really put their finger on, and they'll go back and forth to the doctor, and they'll be given all this type of medication when their problem is really not that of a physical nature, you know, and because people don't associate depression with physical pain, but there are somatic symptoms associated with all mental illnesses, untreated mental illness. And we also know that a major symptom of a mood disorder is also suicide, suicide thoughts or suicide attempts. You see that a lot in individuals who have mood disorders. And then you have an anxiety disorder. People who deal with anxiety, they tend to be, they kind of are nervous all the time. They too have restlessness, problem with sleeping, and in their physical body, you will see increased heart rate, a lot of sweating, trembling, panic attacks, those type of things. Then we have personality disorders. You often have heard people say somebody is borderline personality disorder, something like that.
Yeah.
So when you hear about personality disorders, especially the most common one probably is the borderline personality disorder. You'll see things like that person may have a fear of abandonment, which leads to like responses to things like they're terrified of being abandoned. So they'll start manifesting behaviors that are self-destructive or manipulative with the people in which they relate to try to not be abandoned. And so you'll start seeing a lot of self-destructive, manipulative-type behaviors. They tend to have very unstable relationships, kind of impulsive. They sometimes get into these self-harm-type behaviors, extreme emotional swings, explosive anger, all the things you see with individuals who have personality disorders. And I know in our community, and when I say our, I'm speaking of African Americans, in our community we all know people who show those type of symptoms, and we just have learned to say that's just how they are. You know, we don't always look at it as a mental illness. We kind of just say that's how they are, and we deal with them how they are, but it's more going on with them. And then we have the trauma-related disorders like PTSD, and we know PTSD is very prevalent in the African-American community just due to all the environmental stressors that we have to deal with and the legacy that we've been left due to slavery and Jim Crow and just all the mitigating factors that comes with being Black in America. And so PTSD is extremely common. Well, trauma-related disorders, and specifically PTSD. And with that, you see a lot of flashback, nightmares, severe anxiety, you know. And then people begin to have avoidance-type behavior, so they'll try to avoid certain events, places, or people. You know, they start feeling guilt, shame, and they too also have problems with sleep. You see restlessness and sleep issues show up in a lot of disorders. And that's one of the things that make it hard to diagnose which illness a person may have, because a lot of these symptoms overlap. And the thing that makes it so you'll know what you're dealing with is like the duration of the symptom. It helps to narrow down which one is prevalent, which one is more pervasive. So then the one that most people think about when they think about mental health disorders, is psychotic disorders, and that's the schizophrenia. Sometimes people can be bipolar, which is typically considered a mood disorder, but someone can be bipolar and have psychotic features, which, you know, is a whole different disorder. And so we know with the psychotic disorders, you see hallucinations, delusions, and so those are the ones that people recognize right away. you know, because if you see someone talking to themselves or, you know, doing things that you can just look at and say, oh, that person is talking to somebody that's not there. And you can, you know, people are able to identify that as a mental health issue. But then people are also afraid when they see folks who are having some type of psychotic episode, and they tend to shy away from them or don't really know how to deal with it. Other symptoms of schizophrenia that they call negative symptoms. So the delusions and the hallucinations, those are defined as positive symptoms. So they add to, like, reality. So it's like an enhancement versus negative symptoms take away from what a person is experiencing. So those are things. And those are, so somebody can be schizophrenic, and you may not think they're schizophrenic because they're not walking around talking to themselves, but they could certainly be, because they may have more of the negative symptoms, which are issues with communication. They may have their speech is kind of disassociated, and when they're talking to you, you may be talking about oranges, and they may somehow start talking about cable TV, and you're trying to figure out, how did you get from fruit to cable TV? You know, or they have problems with their memories and difficulties with focus and attention, and they tend to lack or it appears like they lack emotion and things like that. And those are what they call the negative symptoms, because they take away from, like, normal reactions and normal thought processes. And so all of those,
Let me hop in real quick. I didn't want to interrupt you, but if you're just joining us, family, we are here with mental health professional Kalita Chris, and we are discussing, you know, ways of addressing mental illnesses and mental health in our community. And she was just going through a list of the types of mental illnesses there are. And kind of breaking down the symptoms and what to kind of look for. Now, we're going with that same thing in the Black community, being that we address, you know, a lot of stuff, you know, Black issues. Out of those mental illnesses that you name, what would you say would be the top three that would be, you know, more prevalent in the Black or African-American communities? Out of the ones you named,
I would say, as far as what we're diagnosed with, so African Americans tend to be diagnosed more with, like, schizophrenia, bipolar disorders, stuff like that. We're kind of diagnosed more with some of those extreme disorders, Personally, PTSD and mood disorders are more prevalent than, let's say, schizophrenia and probably anxiety, because anxiety and stress-related, trauma-related disorders kind of somehow, at times, they go together. And I think they're more prevalent, but as far as diagnoses are concerned, we tend to be diagnosed more frequently with schizophrenia and less frequently with mood disorders. And I think that's just part of the biases that goes into the healthcare professions and symptoms and how they view us, because schizophrenia is a disease that is, I like to say, is pretty exotic, because when you see it, and people, we know what it is, but there's still a lot of unknown about that disease. And so when African Americans are manifesting certain behaviors, you know, they like to say, oh, they're just, because again, there's a lot of stigma around mental illness. And so if you just call somebody crazy, it's easier to then do things to them that are not necessarily about helping them to recover. And so we often use the criminal justice system, because we'll say, well, they're not suited for society because they're just crazy. And the way that we deal with mental illness in our society is kind of like lock it up or hide it or, you know, do something where people aren't getting services. And you also see in our it starts with our kids and our youth in school. And so oftentimes, because we as African Americans, we just experience some of the, I would say, what we experience due to poverty and racism and segregation, all those things that we have to deal with, all those little things that we deal with every day, and we deal with them starting in infancy. When a kid becomes maybe 7 or 8, and if they come in an environment, coming from an environment where it's kind of they're dealing with the stressors of poverty, then you might start seeing certain behaviors. And the school systems are now just so caught up in diagnosing a kid with ADHD and all these other disorders, setting them on a path of having some type of, because, you know, you go from ADHD to bipolar and then the schizophrenia, particularly our young males. And no one is thinking maybe this kid is just depressed because, or maybe he's just hungry, or maybe he saw some violence in his neighborhood and he's traumatized. But they would prefer, it's easier just to say he can't sit still. He won't listen to the teacher. He's, you know, hitting on little Timmy instead of talking to him and talking to his parents and saying what is going on at home, you know, from a clinical standpoint and not a judgmental standpoint. And that's hard to do because we're dealing with all type of biases constantly. It's like people that we have to overcome. And then medication
and that
is always
working. Yes, indeed. Let me just hop in real quick because I wanted to ask, like, my question is directly related to that because how much, because I know you mentioned, you know, there could be chemical imbalances that could produce a mental illness as well, but I'm wondering, you know, as it pertains to black people, how much, because shout out to Dr. Frances Cress Welson, she's a psychologist, wrote the ISIS paper, and she talks a lot about white supremacy and how the system, you know, going back to when we first hit the shores and, you know, on up to today, how the system of racism and terrorism and trauma, how that affects the mental health of black people. And even today we see it, like you say, in society, you know, we got trauma. You see death around, people getting shot, people going to jail, inadequate food, inadequate economic resources. So I'm wondering how much does society contribute to the mental health of black people versus, you know, maybe some chemical imbalance? Do you think it's more of society or, you know what I'm saying? Like,
well,
what's the gauge as far as how society plays a role in our mental health?
Well, definitely what we deal with in our day-to-day life can exacerbate symptoms that are already there. So there's all type of root causes, you know, to mental illness. You have genetic causes, so people are just born predisposed to certain mental illnesses, and then something may happen, some type of trigger that then brings that mental illness to the forefront and begins to show itself. And so there's also events that can happen that can trigger someone to become mentally ill. Sometimes people have medical disorders that will then start, exhibiting mental health symptoms, you know, medical disorders like, let's say, dementia or something like that. And someone who's dealing with those type of disorders, they then will start exhibiting some mental health symptoms. And other root causes of mental illness is substance use. Illicit, and it doesn't have to even be illicit drugs. They like to say illicit drugs, but there are some prescribed medications, and we see it all the time on TV when they say if you start having suicidal thoughts and this, that, and another, they can induce a psychological response. And so now, as far as just the trauma Black folk deal with, and we don't even have to go as far back as when we came over here, when they brought us over here on these ships. You know, we deal with trauma every day, all type of microaggressions right now in 2020.
Right.
You know,
right.
Just
right.
Even the Ahmaud Arbery case just reinforces or builds onto stress, you know, because you're like, as a mother of two sons, I'm thinking now, man, I hope my sons don't have to deal with that, because they may. And so that to even have
mm-hmm.
those thoughts creates a psychological response in me, and it creates increased heart rate and all those things that go along
That's right.
with anxiety, right? And so
right.
I don't know if it induces it, but it certainly exacerbates symptoms that you may have already, or illnesses that you may have already been predisposed to, you know. So,
gotcha. Yes, indeed.
But I do want
yes,
to say
indeed.
That illnesses,
go ahead.
Particularly something like a schizophrenia, even though we're diagnosed more, it's not necessarily more prevalent in our community. What is... the issue at hand is that we don't get the help that we need. Because, like I said,
right.
I'm thinking mood disorders in general are more common. However, and it is just not health care, it's even in our own community, because we ourselves sometimes stop our family and our friends from getting the help that they need, because we see mental illness in our community, the stigma is it's a weakness, or this is something God, you know, has punished you with, or you just need to pray, or you're just not strong enough. And so we suffer longer, and some effects of it are more detrimental than other communities. And it's because of, you know, systemic racism in the health field, but we also in our own community, and that's my thing. I want to kind of just look at what community to stop stigmatizing one another if we see someone presenting with a mental health disorder. So because before we can ask
that's right.
others to look out for us, we have to look out for us, and we have to bring
That's
one
right.
another in and say, I see that you're suffering with something, just by the way you reacted to this situation, let me know it may be a little something deeper. And so that's why
that's
I
right.
wanted to kind of talk about the symptoms. So if you see a young person not, you know, sleeping too much or not sleeping at all, or if you hear a young person saying stuff like, man, I don't even know why I'm here. When you hear things like that, you can't just brush that off and say, oh,
that's right.
okay, just go do this, just go do that. No, you need to, like, take a step back and sit down and talk with this person and say, hey, what's going on? And medications, you know, oftentimes in our community, we say, well, you don't need to take this and you don't need to take that, and just pray about it and stuff. But some illnesses, you do need to take medication. And you may not need to take it forever, but it may help you to be able to then get the therapy or whatever you're needing to get through this time. It doesn't mean that you have to be,
That's right.
you know, with some illnesses like a schizophrenia, you probably will need to be on medication forever because it is so debilitating. But some of those other illnesses, but for right now, you may need an antidepressant. If you're not sleeping at night,
right.
you may need something to help you sleep because you're not functioning at your optimum level. If you're
right.
nervous all the time, if you're having body pains, if you're having digestive issues, if you can't sleep at night and you don't know the root causes of it, you're not functioning. You may go to work every day.
That's right.
But you're still not functioning. You're not enjoying life. You're not living.
Right.
You're just kind of like existing.
That's right.
And a lot of that has mental health roots. And we in our community, you know, we like to just say, well, go to church, just pray, just do this. And you do all of that too. You do all of that, and then you still seek help. We would never tell someone who has cancer, don't go see an oncologist. We're going to tell them to pray, and we're going to take them to the doctor. You know, somebody
That's right.
who has diabetes, we're going to tell them to pray that God deliver them, but we're going to also make sure they take their insulin. Because
yes,
you know,
indeed.
It's advice that somebody who has depression will say, oh,
yes,
you okay,
indeed.
You okay. So then if that person then harms themselves, then nobody knows where it came from.
Exactly. Let me stop you right there. But, man, excellent job. A lot of information. I hope the family was listening, taking notes. If you're just joining us, we are talking about mental health, mental illness in our community. How do we address it? How do we recognize the signs? That was mental health professional Kalita Chris. And we want to bring in actually two other mental health professionals, and then we'll give Rigel and Brother Mufasa opportunity to ask a question, and then we'll hit the call lines. You know, this is a very important topic, and, you know, we want to give the family a chance to, you know, ask questions as well. So let's bring in Monique West and Tiffany McNair. Are you all with the sisters?
Yes.
Hi.
I am. Hi.
Yes, indeed. How y'all doing? First of all, thank you, you know, for spending some of your Sunday evening with us. We definitely appreciate it. You know, before we get started, you could just give, you know, a brief 1 to 2 minute introduction about yourself and, you know, if there's anything you want the family to know before we get started.
Okay, Tiffany, you can go first.
Oh, thanks, Monique. I'm Tiffany McNair. Currently, I'm at Christian Northwest as a resource coordinator. Pretty much what I do there is I link patients to community resources. We see a lot of patients that come in, for one, with mental health issues or with even sneezy cold issues. I call them sneezy cold issues because a lot of patients come in, my big toe hurt or something. And so what I do is I link them to their primary care doctors who should be handling all of the minor things that are going on for preventative care. I have experience with working with children that have had mental illness. I've also worked with the jail diversion program, in which I was in contact with a lot of people in the county jail who had mental illness, and I would link them once they were discharged from the jail. I would get them linked to someone who can help them further. So I have about a little over 20 years of experience.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Thank you, Tiffany. And Monique West, you can go.
Yes, hi. Well, right now I am a sign language interpreter with the special school district. So I work in elementary, middle school, and high school. I am a sign language interpreter for students of the deaf and staff of the deaf. And before that, I was in social service. Specifically mental health. I have about 20 years experience in mental health and maybe 26 years experience in social service overall. So I've dealt with, as a social worker, mental illness. I worked with the deaf and mentally ill, and I've also worked with abused children, with teenage offenders, just kind of all over the place, the elderly all over the place. So.
All right. Yes, indeed. Well, once again, thank you all for joining us. And, you know, we appreciate you spending some time with us. So Queen Rigel and Brother Mufasa, you know, give y'all opportunity if y'all want to ask the panel some questions. Let's get it.
Go ahead, Mufasa. I know he said he had a few questions.
Yes. First, I'll start off by thanking Kalita, Tiffany, and Monique for taking the time out to come on and talk with us about such an important matter. So I really appreciate that. Basically, I had a couple of questions. One is, which Kalita kind of went into, is the signs that you may have, you know, a friend or a loved one that's going through some type of illness. So she kind of went into some of those. But I want you guys to also touch into ways that, say, if you're someone that, you know, like I said, is a friend or a loved one, what are some of the ways that you could help this person that you, you know, can see is going through some things, that they, you know, they're going through some type of illness. What are some ways that we could help?
Well, the best way to help is to just listen. Just let them talk about how they feel, what their thoughts are, and don't necessarily jump in there with, oh, you know, it'll be okay, because they hear that a lot. Just listen to what they have to say. Make sure that you're understanding what they say. So after they express themselves, say, okay, so what I'm getting is that you said such and such, to make sure that you got everything right that they said. Be there to listen. Don't judge. What works for you doesn't necessarily work for them. And just being able to have someone listen to you. And even if you don't have a mental illness, if you are bummed or depressed about something and you speak to somebody, they don't necessarily have to talk you to death. Just allow you to say what you're feeling makes you feel so much better when it's said and done. You don't necessarily have to give your input or advice. If you have experience with it, by all means. But otherwise, just listen to a person and be there and show support that way. That would be the first thing that you can do for them. Don't judge them or make them feel less than, and certainly don't be dismissive. Well, what I would do, what nobody asks you, just listen first. That's the most important thing that you can do.
And I would add to. Oh, hello?
Yeah, go ahead. You got it.
Yeah, okay. I would add, to piggyback on what Monique said, just definitely paying attention to what's being said. If you hear any signs that may say, you know, I feel like ending my life, or, you know, I'm going to take a bunch of pills and things like that, you definitely have to pay attention to those signs. So I would add, in addition to just listening to them, being aware of those trigger words.
Yeah.
Got it. And I'll ask one other question, because this is something that I know a lot of us deal with in, you know, I hate to say in our community, because like Khalid said earlier, everyone suffers from these, from different things. But what do you have to say about people who self-medicate, you know, who go through self-medicating with, you know, like marijuana, alcohol, things of that nature?
Well, my first thing would be, I understand the need to do it, because it's right there, it's readily available, and unfortunately in the Black community, it's almost more acceptable to have a drug or alcohol issue than it is to have a mental health issue. That's a problem that
right.
we have in our community. But to, that's a short-term solution to a long-term problem. You know, a lot of people, the first thing they do when they get depressed is go and get some liquor. Well, alcohol is a depressant, so you're actually making that mm-hmm. symptom that much worse. So self-medicating is not the answer in the long run. Definitely go to a professional who can listen to your symptoms and prescribe something based on what you're exhibiting. And I understand a lot of people don't want to do that, because one thing I've heard a lot from prior clients is, well, that doctor's not going to make me a guinea pig. He's not going to dope me up on medication. But you have to try things until you can find what's best suitable for you. And that's certainly better than the street drugs and, yes, even marijuana.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to add also with illicit drug use, substance use disorders themselves is a mental illness. So sometimes when we talk about substance use disorder, we see it as a morality issue, a illness of choice. But people don't really choose to become addicts. People choose to use drugs, but becoming an addict is something different, because to become an addict requires some type of metabolic response to the substance in which you're using. And so nobody chooses addiction. So, because we all know, because we've all have been young, we all have been around folks where we all had drank too much, or, you know, been around people in our youth where we're experimenting with things. And in that group of
right.
people, there's always one or two people who kind of do more than everybody else, who kind of can't, it seems like they just can't stop. So that person probably is predisposed to an addiction disorder, because it's something is happening to them from a metabolic standpoint, you know, that their body is consuming these drugs differently. And I think that one of the things that happens, because, again, stigma around substance use, instead of offering people help, non-judgmental help, objective help, you know, understanding that this person is really struggling. There's not many people who want to just sell their bodies and do any type of thing for this high. And with some drugs, people are not even getting high anymore. They're just trying to maintain, like, feel well. And so I think it's important for us to also see substance use as a symptom, oftentimes as a symptom of some underlying disorder. But in and of itself, it is a mental illness because the way that the body or the brain has responded to that substance. Because everybody, you know, we think that everybody that smoked cocaine or maybe what we would call a crackhead, but that's not true. Everybody that smokes cocaine is not necessarily an addict. A lot of people become addicts, but everybody that smokes or do drugs is not an addict. But there are a significant number of people who are. And so I think, again, back to the resources, and in our community, and I agree with Monique when she says it's kind of more accessible in our community to be struggling with an addiction disorder than to say, hey, I'm depressed. This is why I drink a lot.
And can
that's
I
right.
add
yes, indeed.
That?
Yes,
I wanted
ahead.
To add to that. What I've noticed from working in the ERs is that a lot of patients don't have insurance. And so that plays a part, too. If you don't have the insurance to go see a therapist or go see a psychiatrist or psychologist, then you self-medicate and because you don't have the resources to go see someone. It costs money to go see those,
right.
you know, professionals.
Right.
So that's another concern. And that's another reason why we may have a lot of people, you know, using, you know, self-medicating as opposed to going to see a professional.
And I'm glad y'all broke it down like that because I certainly don't want to be beating up on people who, you know, people do things recreationally. But to understand that, you said, addictions, you know, that's something else in itself right there. So it's not like I'm not bashing on people who, you know, recreationally had them a sip or a smoke. So I'm glad you guys distinguished between those.
Yes, indeed. Family, if you're just joining us, this Collective Minds Radio, we are having a powerful build on mental illness and mental health in our communities. We are joined by Kalita Chris, Tiffany McNair, and Monique West, three health care professionals who have been, you know, dealing with these issues for a very long time. Now, I do have one question before we get to the call lines. I got to squeeze this in. If I may, can I do it, Roger, or did you want to go?
Go ahead.
Okay, just real quick. Because we talked about, you know, mental illness in our community, and, you know, it hit me one day when I was watching one of these lockdown or these jail shows, you know, that they be having on TV where they be interviewing brothers and people in jail. And I'm sitting here looking, and I was looking, I say, most of these brothers in jail, they suffer from some type of mental illness. So my question is, like, how do you guys know of any programs in jail for them to address mental illness, or are they just saying these people just need to be locked up, they're just criminalizing them, or is there some type of, you know, program or method where they can address mental illnesses that you guys know of? Because that's what I've seen a lot. It's like a lot of these brothers suffer from some type of mental illness, especially when you got repeat offenders, people going back and, you know, things of this nature. So it's like, are there any type of programs that you guys know of where they're addressing mental illness within these prisons?
So I can speak on that a little. There's a program I know in the county jail, and I think it's in the city jail, the city, the workhouse, as well as the justice center. There's a program called the Choices Program, and what they do is while inmates are serving their time, they'll have counselors to come in, they'll have classes, and it's an all-day thing where they work with you all day, constantly you're doing something. But they have a program. That program is for inmates who are in jail. They also have a mental health court as well as a drug court.
Right.
So if they see that, say, for instance, if an inmate, and I don't know how many times you had to have, you know, done been an offender, but what they will do is they, if you get into one of those programs, they'll shorten your time. If you go through that program, you'll get a case manager. They'll follow you, and you have a actually a, something – what's the word I'm looking for? You'll have a whole program that you have to follow in order for you to graduate
right.
from that program. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
So those are the only those are the only three that I know of.
Yeah, because I'm
thinking right.
a lot of times they just chalk it up as okay, these are just criminals without looking into the underlining, you know, what's causing this behavior. I think a lot of times due to the system, and especially with black males or black women, they just chalk it up. These people are just violent. You know, they just acting
mm-hmm.
out without actually addressing what we're talking about today, which is, you know, it could be some type of mental illness there. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
but
have,
I digress. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did have, you know, clients who were incarcerated, and while they were in jail, you know, they do have psychiatrists that are there to see the prisoners who need it. The problem is
right.
they get substandard care. You have one
okay.
or two psychiatrists that sees each inmate with a diagnosis maybe once a month. So it doesn't matter if they're having a reaction to that medication. And, you know, typically the doctor will tell you, take this medication, let's try it for 2 weeks, then we'll come back and revisit it, see if it works. If not, we'll try something else. You don't have that luxury at the jail. You take what they give you. If you have a reaction to it, well, you still have to wait until the next month to see that doctor who may have 5 or 10 minutes to see you.
Unless,
wow.
I was going to say, unless the case manager on the floor, like you can get a message to the doctor from the case manager. I found that out when I was working in the county jail, that if you talk to the case manager on the floor and you let them know the medicine is not working, they can advocate on your behalf. But it also it depends on how severe your symptoms are, like what is your reaction to the medication. It depends
yeah.
on, like, what extent to it is.
Oh, that must
okay.
be new.
And
just
one little small tidbit, if I can. There's also a program, and it's not really a program, but it's a way in which they try to prevent certain people from going into the jail system to begin with, and they call
mm-hmm.
it like a CIT program, a crisis
yeah.
intervention team. And so
right,
that's when
right.
police officers, when they go into a situation and they see someone maybe having a mental health issue, they are should and they are supposed to call some of our community health providers, and they are supposed to go out with someone who's a trained CIT person, crisis intervention case manager, to go out and kind of somewhat assess the situation, and instead of taking the person to prison, maybe taking them to a hospital. So, I mean,
right.
ideally,
yes, indeed.
This is a great program, but we also have to think about, again, those biases when it comes to
right.
implementation.
Mm-hmm.
And then oftentimes
right.
the police, they have to have the insight from the beginning to say, oh, this person just isn't a violent lunatic, that this guy is having a,
right.
a psychiatric issue. But that's where the breakdown
that's
happens.
That's right, exactly.
These people getting
right.
shot down in the street. Or like the guy
right.
in Riverview when he had the knife. This was right after
yeah,
all those
I remember
other
that.
Things. And they just shot him down. That guy was having a psychiatric issue.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
He came
exactly.
out, he had a knife, and now he's no longer living. And that's because
yes.
the police officers didn't have the insight. They just reacted, and they killed him. And so, I mean,
exactly.
But once you get into the criminal justice system, you know, particularly if you're African-American, it's kind of really hard for them to say,
right.
you know.
Right. And that's the point I was making, but go ahead. You kind of breaking up. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
You kind of breaking
that's
up.
That's really all I need to say.
All right.
Was
thank
just
you for just joining
easier.
Us. Okay, if you're just joining this family, we are doing a show on mental health. This is also, I believe, Mental Health Awareness Month, and this is also a show dedicated to our little cousin, Lil Cliff. He committed suicide a couple weeks ago, and we suspect that he may have been suffering from mental health as well, so we definitely want to keep his name alive and dedicate this particular show to him as well. The young man was only 21 years old, and, you know, as a family, we've been wrestling with, you know, what could we have done, what signs could we have seen, you know, the type of behaviors, type of language he may have been using, you know, that we could have picked up on and possibly prevented such a drastic move. So we just want to put that out there and say this is, you know, part of the reason that we're having this discussion. So, you know, again, rest in power to Lil Cliff. So, yeah, y'all want to hit the call lines. I know, Elijah, if you have one quick question, but we definitely want to give the callers an opportunity to ask these, you know, mental health professionals a question. That way we can, you know, keep the knowledge going and keep the information going as well. So, y'all want to hit the call line?
Sure.
All right, cool. Let's go. Roger. Did we lose Roger? Is he still with us?
Yeah, she should still be there.
Oh,
well,
might be on mute.
That's why
we.
How you doing, Kevin?
Waiting on. There she go. There
go
she
ahead.
Go.
Yeah, I sent you an email.
Can you hear me?
Go ahead, bro.
Yeah, I sent him an email about the second or third time with a whole list about 51 items that's been included as mental illness. And, you know, here's the thing. There are jobs that you would never get with a criminal record, from teaching, child care, health care, law enforcement, finance, retail, government, like correctional officers, and aviation,
mm-hmm.
especially if you've ever been affiliated with an illegal drug, which includes marijuana. But I want to get asked this question. A few decades ago, by the American Psychiatric Association, homosexuality was looked at as a mental illness. Now, due to politics, we're supposed to recognize it as being normal. And a couple other things, Ritalin, mental conditions that can disqualify a person from gun and certain employments include Ritalin, brain concussion, like kids out there playing football. But what about
mm-hmm.
the thoughts of lingering oppressive victimization? Is that not also mental illness? So, too, mental illness along the lines of these, you know, few things, and a lot of them you guys already answered or included in your conversation, but thoughts of lingering oppressive victimization. And what about this thing with homosexuality and gender confusing? How is it that politics all of a sudden push the category of that being in a mental illness category, now we're supposed to be something you accept. And look how they are pushing it at the elementary grades.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Is the people that's pushing this, is there something wrong with their minds? I'm going to listen.
I'll question the education.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, let them respond. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead and respond.
Yeah, I work in the elementary schools, the middle schools, and the high schools, and I don't necessarily see it being pushed. What I do see that is kind of unusual is that you do have young kids who are maybe third grade, fourth grade, who may be born one gender and identify with another gender. What I see is the schools don't necessarily intervene with that. It's more so considered a home issue, where I guess in the past they will probably intervene, but they pretty much leave it to the families now. But it's not an agenda that's being pushed in the schools. And, you know, I've never seen it pushed.
Okay. That's good.
That
that's
I can say, even though teachers may have opinions about it, and I've heard those opinions,
But right. they don't push it, you know, they don't, you know, encourage it or anything.
Well, that's
okay.
good.
Yes,
yeah, let's, we're going to go ahead and continue to move to the call lines. We're wrapping up, and then the phone lines is blowing up, everybody. So let's try to get to as many callers as we can. Let's move right along now. Area code 502.
I was going to say, make sure that, you know, make sure the callers understand, please come, you know, because we do have a lot of callers. If you could just give us, you know, your comment or question, and then, you know, hang up, and then we'll let the panel respond. Just so we
right.
can keep
well,
it moving.
Well,
go
you
ahead.
Don't necessarily have to hang up, but just, you know, you can continue to listen for the reply.
Yeah.
Area
I'm sorry.
Code 5.
Exactly. I'm sorry.
Area code 502-773. Caller, you're on with Collective Minds Radio. Do you have a question or a comment?
Hi, thank you. I just have a comment calling from 502. So first off, thank you for your panel. That was good information. My comment is this. I'm a person that has worked in substance abuse field for 25 to 30 years, and that's all I've done. And one of the things I've discovered working in that field of chemical dependency and working with primarily men, primarily African-American male population, my guys, most of them have co-occurring disorders, and what comes first is the mental illness, and they start using all different types of substances to self-medicate because, as somebody said earlier, they're not allowed, they're not given permission, they don't have home life where they feel safe enough to say, this is really what's going on. But it's okay if they smoke a joint with a big cousin or if they drink a beer with this relative. But if they say, I don't feel good on the inside, I feel scared, or they can't say, this is what's happening to me when you're not here. I work with a lot of men, and this is what me and my guys talk about. Most of my guys have what I refer to as unresolved, unaddressed traumas that were never addressed. So by the time they get to me, they're 30, 40, 50-year-old men who have been in the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. They've got babies all over the place. Mm-hmm. They've never been able to hold down a job. They've never been able to live independently because they had some stuff that happened in the home when they were 7, 8, 9, 10. That never got addressed. And I just wanted to put that out there.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Carla. Did y'all want to respond to that?
Thank you for your work.
Thank you, Carla.
Yeah. Thank you for your work.
Yes.
And I agree. I definitely agree with you. It's never been addressed. That's one of those taboos in the African-American community where no one wants to address what's going on in the home. What's kept in your home is kept secret.
Yes.
And things like that. But I totally agree with you.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Area code 314-361. Caller, you're on with Collective Minds Radio. Do you have a question or a comment? Make it plain, caller.
Yes. Thank you. How everybody doing? But one of the number one things that I've seen with a lot of mental people and just people in general, I'm just even speaking for ourselves, that it is so important to let a person know that you care about them or love them. I don't care if it's your child, when they're small, always embrace them. Let them feel important. If it's your uncle, if it's even your mate, let them know that they are important, that they love or you care about them. Love is one of the hardest things for people to say, even for people who are supposed to be Christians or whatever. It's not said enough. And that love or sharing, expressing love can be a difference in helping, even with a mental person. You see them, you know, hey, speak to them. Don't look mad or frowned up or, hey, just be on love tip. Just apply that, and you'll be surprised of people even opening up to you. You can help them or giving them a reason to live. But if everybody mad and turning away and I don't like you or you frown at me, you'll be surprised of the negativeness that it affects people. But the number one thing is love. And I applaud you ladies for helping mental people because to be honest with you, you have to go out more on love and caring about a person to be able to want to help them. Thank you.
Oh, thank
yes,
you.
Indeed.
That's true.
Thank you, Colin.
Good point.
Can I respond to that? Can I respond to that right
yes,
there?
Yes, indeed. Yes,
so
indeed.
I think that the caller is absolutely right. It's very important for us to show people that we care and to tell people and express love, you know, verbally, physically, emotionally. But I also don't want to lose sight of the fact that mental health sometimes is deeper than somebody loving you. You know, people, because if you're dealing with a clinical disorder, a psychological disorder where you have your perceptions the way, and that's why I wanted to define mental illness from the very beginning. It is the way people perceive things. It's a significant impairment on how somebody thinks, behaves, and interacts. So I can tell you all day that I love you, but if you are dealing with a decrease in serotonin in your brain, then you're going to have your reaction to that. You're not going to believe it. And so it's very important to know, like, yes, we have to love one another and love on one another, but sometimes there are some things that are happening that in spite of all the love you can give somebody, they may still end up hurting themselves. They may still end up feeling anxious and scared and nervous or develop an eating disorder or all those type of things that because we still are dealing with a disease of the brain. And so I just don't want to lose sight of, and that's sometimes what we do. Well, if you just hug them enough, then they wouldn't have hurt themselves. Well, maybe, maybe not, because it was the way that they perceived the world because they had it.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And that makes a lot
of
sense.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense, what you just said. So appreciate that.
Okay. Area code 336-965. Caller, you on with Collective Minds Radio? Do you have a question or comment?
Well, I think I have a comment. I don't know. Little Cliff is my grandson. Now, I live in North Carolina, and he lives in St. Louis. I couldn't see the signs that he was going through. So when he called me or I called him, he always sounded happy and okay, and always asking, how do you feel? He said, I feel good, Grandma. I feel good, Grandma. So what are the signs that you look for when you don't see the child and the child's a long way from you? And what do you when they call you or something like that? Other grandkids who doesn't live in the same city that I live in, and I call them all the time. I want to make sure that I'm able to listen to what they're saying to me.
Yes,
okay.
Indeed. Thank
so
you, Paula. Great question. Did y'all get the question? Yeah, did y'all get the question?
Yeah, I did, and I can give some of the warning signs. I know it will be a lot harder when you're not there with the person, but some of the warning signs that you can see with people who may be thinking about suicide, you know, sometimes they'll go, people always want to say, well, they wasn't sad. I didn't see any sadness. But sometimes you will see an extreme calmness because they've made peace with what they're about to do. And so you'll see a person switching from being sad to calm or to even appearing to be happy because they have now decided this is what I'm going to do. Or this person, you may find them talking about death a lot. May not even be talking about killing themselves, but just death in general. And they're not talking about it in a way where they're like saying, oh, I don't want to die. It's just like, hey, death is death, you know, in a very cavalier manner. Again, you see the loss of interest in things that might have been pleasurable, trouble sleeping. You may start seeing them using all type of illicit substances, or maybe if they once were using, they stop using. Nobody loves me. It would be better if I weren't here. They may talk about suicide in a kind of cavalier way, or they may start calling you more, kind of what they call putting their affairs in order. They may start giving away stuff. That you know, they may give away something, or you know, they may even tell you, "I love you," and this may be something that they've never said to you before, but they want you to know this before they go. And it's those type of little changes that you have to. One thing about suicide, if somebody talks about it, even in like a dismissive way, you have to take that seriously, because people don't talk about suicide. So if somebody says something in an offhanded way, that's a very serious comment. And it has to be taken kind of in a serious way, you know. But it's difficult because life is moving, and you could be living with somebody, and life is moving. So nobody is to blame, because one thing I know, just working in this field, if someone has committed to killing themselves, they are going to kill themselves. And so we talk about making sure, you know, if they have the opportunity. What is it, y'all? What do they say? The opportunity, the method, and the conviction to do it. They're going to do it. Mm-hmm. And so you try to intervene before it gets to that point, because, again, that's an untreated symptom. That's the end to an illness.
Right.
You know, exactly. That may have been able to be treated way before it got to that point. You know, with Lil Cliff, it was heartbreaking. You know, it's heartbreaking. What happened to Lil Cliff, it was heartbreaking because he was loved.
Yes, indeed.
However, he didn't feel like it. And nothing nobody could have said or did would have made him feel any differently, because he was suffering from depression and maybe some other things. Because mental health it's not like you get one disease and that's it. You can have several diseases happening all at the same time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, anybody else want to respond, and we get to another call?
No, let's move on. Rewind, area code number. Let me start over and slow down. Area code 319-572. Caller, you're on with Collective Minds Radio. If you have a question or a comment, make it plain, caller.
Oh, I will. Sound like y'all talking about me. I just want to say,
talk to us.
I just want to say, I've been suffering from mental illness my whole life. At the age of 8, they threw me on Ritalin. Then, from the ages of 10 to 16, I was forced to take medications or be punished. And now I am now diagnosed with bipolar schizophrenia. And I don't believe children should be punished for not taking medication at such a young age, where their brains are still not developed. It messes them up. It messed me up. Now I have to be on pills the rest of my life. And half the time, we don't want to. And when y'all think we want y'all to say we love you, we want to talk to you, half the time we don't want to be bothered with you.
Thanks for the comment, Colin. Anybody got a response? I agree that in the schools, you do have these teachers who are quick to throw Ritalin or Adderall to our young kids, because at that point it's like behavior management. It's not what's in the best interest of the child. It's what's in the best interest of the teacher to keep her classroom calm. So I do agree with that. I think they are too quick to throw pills at our young students and not, you know, put those school therapists to use. Let them speak to a counselor before you just automatically throw pills at them. So I do have an issue with that as somebody who's in the mental health field. I absolutely agree with him on that.
There's a book called Children Before They Grow, which is a good book, and it explains that. I think, Kalita, I showed you that book once before, but it's a really thin book for all the callers. If that's something that, you know, it's a really good book on how they misdiagnose, particularly African American males, in the school. So that's a good reference book for anyone. Kill Them Before They Grow by Michael Porter, I think that's his name.
And advocate for your children, parents. Don't just accept what they have to say and let them medicate your child. Ask questions, get involved, advocate for your child. That's your responsibility.
Exactly. As a parent, you're absolutely right.
Yes, indeed.
Let's move right along.
Area code 314-438. Call your own with Collective Minds Radio. Do you have a question or comment? Make it plain, Colin. Any questions or comment? Okay. I'll move right along. Area code 314-605, call your own with Collective Minds Radio. Do you have a question or comment?
Probably just listening. Let's go.
Okay, sorry, caller, we missed you. Area code 315-767. Caller, you're on with Collective Minds Radio. Do you have a question or a comment?
Yeah, I'll make a quick comment. Thanks for having me on, y'all. So, yeah, you just spoke with my brother, caller before, and so you know his situation. And I myself am a survivor two times over of the behavioral health system. The military, when I was exiting, they tried to get me to believe that I should have remorse for the activities I performed while I was in the military. And because I didn't have that remorse for the activities that I was trained to perform.
Carla, your phone is static. Your phone is static.
Yeah, we can't hear.
Oh. All right. Well, then I'll let you get on to another caller that you can't hear.
I can hear you now.
If you can't.
Yeah, you was good now. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
We can hear you now. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying that I'm a survivor two times over of the mental health society. As I was coming out the military, they tried to get me to get on a bunch of pills and medication because I didn't understand why, and they couldn't understand why I wasn't remorseful for the activities that I performed that I was trained to perform in the military, and they tried to get me to mentally deficient and put me on antipsychotics and depressants and everything, and I'm sure they had other results that they wanted. They wanted to diagnose me with something so they can remove my ability to have firearms because of my training and everything. They didn't want a person like me out here in the military, out of the military and out here in the world, being able to do whatever I wanted to do. But I got by because I came to the realization that I wasn't wrong in my thinking, and that the mental facilities, my psychologist and my therapist were trying to convince me there was something wrong with me. And then my son, like I said, the caller before me was my brother, and he went through that issue. Well, they tried to do that to my son, and we went ahead and just pulled him out of school, and he's being homeschooled. And he's 10 years old right now, and he's starting high school next year.
Oh, there you go. That's awesome.
So I don't trust the mental health system at all. But that's my comment. You carry on.
All right. Yes, indeed, caller. Thank you.
Okay. Let's move right along.
Well, I think just to address some of the things you're saying, I can definitely understand the distrust and mistrust of the mental health system because, again, it is a system, and we know that all these systems here in this country in which we live in, the foundation of all of them, there's a racist root. And so, like we said from the very beginning, African Americans, particularly African American males, are diagnosed with these disorders at a disproportionate rate than any other group of people, even though those diseases, let's say like a schizophrenia or something, does not show up more often in our race than any other race. However, we're diagnosed with it more often. Now, what was a very interesting correlation he made, which is something I myself am going to start researching, is him suggesting that perhaps one of the reasons why they're making these diagnoses is to prevent African Americans from being able to get firearms. That's an interesting correlation that I had not before considered, but that is something to consider.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. We're coming down to the last 10 minutes of the show. We've been having a great dialogue, great build. Let's try to get one more caller, and then we can kind of, wrap it up with our guests. Roger.
Okay. Code 314-833. Caller, you're on with Collective Minds Radio. Do you have a question or a comment? Okay, maybe they just
listened. I'm going to try one more.
Area code 314-616. Caller, you're on with Collective Minds Radio. Do you have a question or a comment?
Okay, maybe they just listening too. Okay.
So we down to the within the last 10 minutes. So, again, man, this show has been powerful. I want to just say, you know, thank you to the guests because this show has really helped me personally, you know, dealing with the death of Lil Cliff. Because, again, like, you know, his grandmother called in, I really didn't see any signs. You know what I'm saying? And I've been around Lil Cliff plenty of times. And, you know, we never really had deep conversations, but I didn't recognize any signs that he would, you know, take his own life. So this show has helped me to kind of be aware because I have kids, you know, I have nieces and things like that. So it's helping. This show has helped me to be aware and to kind of probe and listen. I think Monique or Tiffany said, you know, you want to listen to the person and kind of probe and maybe ask questions and just sit there and just listen and let them kind of reveal and open up to you. So this has really helped me. I know it's helped the other family out there as well. So, like I said, I just want to thank you guys. And, you know, a lot of times in our community, we just be like, oh, they crazy or they slow, and we use different terms that are not accurate to describe what's actually going on with people. And, you know, being in this society, I think when we're in this society, because my thing is the inmates, the patients are running a society. This society is being run by crazy people. We don't recognize it because we in it and we live it and we think all this stuff is normal. But this society is actually run by crazy people, so it's no surprise that the product or the society itself is going to be a little crazy, a little off. So we all have different issues, you know, that we deal with. But it's important to recognize that, okay, I'm dealing with something. Okay, I need a drink. I drink every week. You know what I'm saying? So I'm dealing with something. But it's important to recognize these things, and I think a lot of people don't. And that's where we start to see the spiral down, the mental illness thing goes. But yeah, I just wanted to put that out there and thank you guys for this show. It has been powerful and give you guys an opportunity, maybe 1 minute apiece, just to kind of, you know, if you want to summarize something and give some advice to the family as we wrap up the show.
Well,
yeah, make it plain, though. Yeah, make it plain.
Yeah. Okay, I just want to give out, like, some resource numbers for people who may be dealing with some disorders, some mental illness, or just have questions. One of the numbers I want to give is to the National Suicide Prevention. The number is 1-800-273-8255. And then I want to give the number for the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, known as SAMHSA. The number is 1-877-726-4727. And then we have a resource here in our area, but they also have a 1-800 number called Behavior Health Response. That number is 1-800-811-4760. Those are 24-hour crisis hotlines. If someone is in need of help, please reach out.
Yes, indeed. Yes, thank you. Anybody else? Tiffany and Monique, if you want to, you know, just wrap it up in maybe a minute, you know, a minute and a half, some parting words for the family or some advice. Hello? Are they still on?
Are they?
No, or maybe they have, muted. Or.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Before that point comes, just listen. And
okay.
Show your love and just show your support without judgment and without being dismissive and saying, oh, well, just pray about it. Because you can pray all night and all day, and that's just not the only thing. It also takes action as well. So just be supportive and non-judgmental. That would be my advice.
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
Thank you.
And mine would be it's okay to seek counseling. and especially in our community, seek counseling, seek mental health, seek a mental health professional, whether that is counseling or psychiatry. It's important to do that. I know, again, as I said before, in our community, it's taboo to go talk to someone. We're always told to hold in our feelings and just deal with it at home, and, you know, nobody needs to know about it. But it's very important to seek the help. So, and don't be afraid to seek help.
Yes, indeed. That's a big one. One of the hardest things to say is, I need help.
I need help.
So
exactly.
That is very important. Yep, that is very important. Thank you. Brother Mufasa and Queen Ryder, y'all want to wrap us up?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, again, I also want to say thanks to you all again for coming on. We really appreciate it and appreciate you giving the resources to people. It's very good information. Me, myself, I have family members. I mean, I always look at it this way. At some level, we all suffer from some type of illness. You know, it just may not be as drastic as others. So I really appreciate you guys coming on, and I'll be listening to this show again to break it down and study it more and share it with more people.
Well, thank you.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. I also like to thank everybody for coming on, sacrificing your time and spreading it with us and the show and our listeners, and we always appreciate our listeners for supporting us as well. I did want to have one quick question. You guys only one person may be able to answer, but I know we talked about a lot of the symptoms and the signs and things like that, and listening is very important and very helpful. But after you listen, is there something that you should do, as you know, after that? Like, what's the proactive point after you listen to someone and you may walk away and say, okay, well, I'm a little concerned because of what I heard. So now what do I do? Can one person take that?
Great question.
Mm-hmm. Who wants it?
Monique?
Okay. I would just say continue to be involved. Don't just hang up the phone and just go on with life. If you hear something that's concerning to you, then you need to act on it. You need to continue to ask questions. You need to continue to probe to make sure they don't have a plan in place or they're not thinking about it. But don't just go on with life as usual. Just, hey, I was thinking about you. Is everything okay? You want to do something. Lay eyes on that person. Mm-hmm. Make sure that person is okay, because people can pretend anything on a phone. Be actively involved.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to add, you can always call 911. You can always call 911 and say, hey, mm-hmm. I am concerned that this person is going to hurt themselves. And all the technology we have available, you can keep that person on the phone and still call 911. That's very important. You don't want to stop talking to the person, because in that period of time that you stop talking to them, they may harm themselves. Or if you're in the room with other people, I have such and such on the phone, you go call the police and have them at their house. You can always call 911
on
911 because that mm-hmm. is an emergency.
A lot of times, if they're telling you what's going on, it's a cry for help. So it's more of a cry, and they want you to know so you can help them get the help that they need.
Yeah,
that's right.
Right.
Yes,
I appreciate that. I thank everybody again, and thank everybody for
coming in
with us. This is a great show, very important discussion. It was very much needed. I think we need to do a follow-up with this thing here.
Tune
in with us next Sunday and each and every Sunday, 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. Like always, if you have any show topic ideas, feel free to email us at collectiveminds@yahoo.com. And we look forward to talking to you again.
All in with your viewpoint.
All right.
Our collective, a colorful perspective. The brothers. Word to the mothers of the queens and the kings. We gon' get into some things. Dig deep and going deeper. Waking up the sleeper. Who be been the peeper? Yeah, your boy done found a keeper. See, we talking.
Like, whoa.